It's time for the second funniest podcast with your hosts, the Kevin Miller and Justin Wersch. Have fun, guys.
Well, thank you, Sam. Hello and welcome to the second funniest podcast. This is episode 432. I'm your host, Justin Wersch. With me, as always, is the one, the only. He will never be historically documented, but will always have car insurance. TheKevinMiller.com. Jump and press the server button, Kevin.
Open your proxy server and search for syntax errors, Justin.
Well, I've got an error 404 in my proxy server.
I got a 401.
Oh, what's that mean?
I think there's an actual error within the page.
Oh, no.
Not just file not found.
I have no file found.
Yeah.
That means I'm soulless, people. Mm. We're here today. today we decided to do an NPR format. I'm still hung up on earlier this week. I was talking about an Arctic blast.
Arctic?
If this is
NPR, there needs to be more pauses. More pauses. Where I can say something strikingly liberal but sound modest.
Yeah.
And then make you think about it. Or are there starving people? We don't know. And then some music you've never heard of before. they're even too hipster for hipsters, NPR.
So what do you want to talk about today?
What we got?
Oh, we got emails. You're right. We have video games.
Well, let's let that be filler.
Okay.
On today's show, depending on when you're listening to it, I want to, if you don't already, and you love video games.
And I do not. I mean, I love video games, but
you don't do this. I've made this challenge before to some of our listeners, is that there are two worlds, two communities within the video game world, and there are us fans, the consumers. We are the second party in the relationship.
Yeah.
And we we are the spoiled, self-centered brats of the universe, and we think it's all about us.
Came down hard on us.
It's true. I'm in there, but it's all about me. Why? Because I give the money, right?
Yeah.
And so, but what we...
Show me the money!
What I think we need to be aware of, and where we can have better ability to talk to our parents, a.k.a.
I love black people!
The first party is by being more involved with what the challenges that they have. Because we see things like, why can't they make a game where I can blow up everything on the screen?
Right.
And then we complain about that forever. Why can't games just do that?
Why don't they make backwards compatible games?
Why don't you just do that? And you talk to anybody that's in the industry and they're like, there are a million technological reasons why that doesn't make any sense financially or work power, or it's just incredibly difficult and you don't want to pay for it. So why should we do it? Because you're just griping about it. So my suggestion, as always, is to familiarize yourself with the other community of gamers, the developers. And a great way to do that is to read Gamasutra.com. They send a daily free article that talks about also, you want to find out about spoilers and what developers are working on and who's doing what and what's working and not working, and have real resources, not just your opinions based on what you thought about a game when you played it and how it made you feel, read Gamasutra.com and be on there. They had a lovely article.
Are you trying to get Skyrim and I back together? Because I've already listed that bitch on eBay.
Really? Did you really?
I put her out on the black market like the wench she is.
Speaking of eBay, I realized this when we talked about it a couple weeks ago or a few episodes ago, that I love Skylanders, and I have a second set of Skylanders. I would be happy to give it to you for $40 because I'm going to sell it on eBay. If you want to walk out of here tonight with Skylanders for $40, I'm just going to leave that on the table.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah. Let's slide the card across, because that's a lot for me to think about.
I wanted to do it during the show to give you something to think about.
Oh, man.
$40, and you walk out of here with it. Done. I don't have to deal with eBay because I was going to have to get your help to post it.
Can I phone a friend?
Yes, you may.
I'm going to call Kevin Miller.
Okay.
All right now.
That's the bit.
Do, 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 do.
Hello?
Fear my Arctic blast.
Do it. Go for it.
What? Kevin, you don't even hear the question.
Okay. Ask me out on a date.
Yeah, but that's not the question. We could go on a mandate in it. We go on a mandate almost every week. Are we kind of doing a mandate right now?
You're my favorite Slumdog Millionaire.
What?
Several bits on top of each other.
I know.
So,
late night on the West Coast.
They had so think about that. Buy my Skylanders, okay. Then we could play. It would be great. It'd be great. Okay, so
if we played more video games together, I would honestly really consider...
We will play more video games together.
I don't think we can.
No, okay.
Our lives are about to change.
This is what I've told you, is that if you could get it, then when I do my man date night for everybody inviting guys over, I can be like, guys, this is the kickoff event. Everybody bring your Skylanders. For $9, you can come over and play because I have the game.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great way to say it. So you just think about that, and then you can get.
Well, if I could only drop $9 and get a guy instead of $40 and have...
But then you can level up your dudes and enjoy the game, because you'll want to play the game and get a $9 character and play. Why are we doing this on the show?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, so they have this great article on Game of Sutra about the historicity of games and the preservation of games through it. So, like, you look at the film industry, right? When it first started, film was being thrown apart, and there were these masterpieces and these very clever, innovative films that were artistic and thoughtful because they were just discovering this medium that were lost for decades. And when they find them, they still have a hard time restoring them, putting them back to order, you know, and to present them in the same way that they were intended to be. You have to get a movie theater and get a live orchestra pit, you know, if they're like old-timey silent films. But with game, and so there are efforts, there are desires to want to make to hold on to our past, our 100-year-old, 120-year-old past of filmmaking, but that is not being the case here in the game world. And the article goes on to say the reason is because so much of what we develop and what we work in games is all in an online media or so you have this game, you can buy this game and get play all these server-based games like movies. The game The Movie is a great current example of this. 5 years ago, the game was big. It had over 1 million users. People were uploading videos, writing scripts. I mean, it was a thriving, beautiful, huge community. People posting all these videos and stuff online. And then the game made by Lionsgate, it stopped selling. It was never intended to be a continual hit like The Sims. They pulled the servers down. All of those movies are gone. All of that stuff is gone.
I was going to see what was still going on there. And
nothing.
It's gone.
It's an empty site.
Wow.
And it says, thanks, we had a great run. We've noticed that people have stopped visiting the site. We're no longer posting it. Now, the game still exists, of course, and you can still play the game, but the movies are gone. So that community is gone. Take that to the next level with all of these MMORPGs, with all of these games where you pay for microtransactions to up your digital character. When those servers and that game becomes antiquated, the companies that are designing them are going to shut them down. The interactivity with the game is going to be lost, and all of that work will disappear. Now, arguably, that if somebody really cared about preservation, there will be a way for them to resurrect the game or pull the game out. But the reality of it, like that, the community aspect of it is going to be lost. Because right now, if you wanted to experience Street Fighter II the way you and I did when we were in high school, you can buy an arcade console. You can set it up in your room and be like, kids, this is what it used to be like to play video games. But if you wanted to play Diablo II, if it was, I can't think of a better example of a crappy, cool, independent game, but Diablo 2, eventually the servers will be gone. And they're like, well, here's some screenshots or maybe a YouTube video if you can find it of this cool game, but you're not going to be able to experience the craftsmanship, the artistry, the stories that were put in it, all gone, just completely gone.
It's like, I think it works a lot like social networking in that, you know, Friendster and then MySpace and then now we're on Facebook. And yeah,
his whole point was he went on to say, like, look, you made me buy this 40-cent golden or purple sword in the game, and then when you shut the servers down, you've taken my money, and I never got to hold on to the thing, which is why we discussed a couple weeks ago Skylanders rocks, because even if the game doesn't work, which it always will, because as long as I have a PlayStation, I win, I still have the toys. But if everything is digital, you lose it. But then he says, it's not just about my consumer nerd rage, the second-party spoiled brat thing. It's about the industry itself. We're creating nothing. We're writing on scratch pieces of paper and throwing them out into the
sea. Well, I know that it's not quite the same as it being entirely on the cloud, if you would, or online, but that when you brought this up, the first thing I thought of was that article that I had referenced last week or whatever about the GameCube's death and that...
Yeah.
Excuse me.
But that once a console dies, unless you're really into that and hang on to it, all of a sudden, like, that whole community, like, eventually, it can become like a like an animal. It becomes extinct.
Exactly. Remember Animal Party? How incredible... No, I'm sorry. Animal Crossing. How incredibly big it was when it first came. It was all about on the GameCube. It was the first early social networking. You would trade memory cards with each other, and your characters would move towns, and it, you'd be passing each other around. It'd be like, oh, wow, they, you got this character from me. Nobody plays that game. It's gone completely. And, you know, my game, one of my two GameCube controllers broke, and I called GameStop to be like, do you guys still got... GameCube controllers? Are like, oh, we've got one used that's a third party. You can pick that up for $15.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, and soon enough, all of that's just going to go away.
It just goes away. And then, and like, so it's like when you got me, because you got me Left 4 Dead because I wanted to try it or whatever. And I remember all this hubbub about the game, but it had been so long that by the time I caught up with it, that when I plugged it in and I played it, I'm like, oh, this is a fun game, but I don't understand. Why is it so significant? I'm like, is it the, like, it's just so calm with zombies. And then all of a sudden it hit me that the whole point that made the game fun was that you would be playing and somebody else would join in on your game. They would be one of the other characters because they happened to be at a similar part in the mission. And there was, and I saw, I was like, oh, that's right. So I tried it. Nobody was playing that game. Now, I'm sure people were still playing it, but not at that given time. Whereas if you go
or
online...
Or in that mission with you,
right. If you go online...
Or Journey, the PSN game that is amazing. I mean, hailed as being a beautiful artistic game. Have you played it yet?
No.
You need to download Journey. It is mind-blowingly gorgeous, mysterious, engaging, deep, and there's this whole interactivity where someone else, it doesn't tell you, just suddenly somebody else is around you doing the same thing, and you're working with somebody with no interaction, no communication other than the tools given in the game, and it's beautiful. And that game, it, for all of its hailed for being accredited as a beautiful work of art, a masterpiece of gaming, will that element of it will completely dissolve when the community aspect of the PSN, or when the PSN 2 or you know the PS4 shows up, will these games that you buy on the PSN transfer over? Will Journey be able to be played on your PS4? Probably not. And then this whole game, this beautiful piece of work, will disappear completely.
I wonder if this is also part of the reason why the wow, that does look gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
Excuse me. Why the Smithsonian is opening up a video game exhibit.
Hey, we talked about that.
A long time ago, right? That they, because I get emails updating about the exhibit every once in a while or whatever. And I, I think that there has to be a level of our society or culture, whatever you want to call it, that's like, no, this is worth preserving. This is a big part of our culture. This is...
Yeah, and so what he goes on to say is that a lot of that work is being done by emulators, by hackers. They go in and they steal the code and that kind of stuff. And his push was to tell the industry.
Like I could play Lode Runner on my web browser.
You could, and like I can download Star Fox and play it on my PC here. But Chrono Trigger until finally it was available for I think it's on the
iPhone
Vita now. Yeah. Oh, the iPhone. But why? Why leave it up to them? Why leave it up to the hackers? Why isn't the industry? Why aren't the people that developing?
Because
there's
no money in it.
And that's his push of like, just because there's no money in it doesn't mean that your work wasn't valuable.
I think what they're also kind of relying on, because there was a guy who mentioned on the Facebook page a while ago that he was doing a yard sale and found all of his old Nintendo games and Sega Genesis games. And he's like, he goes, you know, it's funny that he and his wife had talked about it. It's like, everything that's in a box is going to go at the yard sale. And he's like, well, maybe I'll keep this. And there is that, there's like what you, with the collecting of the Skylanders and stuff, there's that collector person that's built into a video game nerd or I think it's a subsection within the video game nerd. Like there's video gamers that are like me that are just like, I'm going to play the game and get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's video gamers that like to keep it and collect it and almost like a timeline for their own life. They look back and go, oh, I remember when I used to play this. I remember when I used to play that kind of thing. And maybe they're those people unintentionally hang on to it. But it is, and I think also, it's a weird thing that we've developed within a society that we just expect stuff to be there.
Yeah.
You know, like it's that joke that they have is like nobody doesn't know anything anymore. Like, I'll just look it up right now on my phone. That we just... That I think that maybe this is one of the consequences of that is that nobody's worried about it because, everything is there. Everything lives someplace, somewhere, and that we just have to go find the guy who left it there and put it on the internet for us. So,
but that's going to go away. And then, see, that's the thing. Like, it may be on there. But
the internet is going away?
Well, the content will dissolve, or it'll just be a video of it.
It'll be a wiki entry.
Exactly, yeah. At the very bottom. They'll be able to, oh, I've learned it. But you won't be able to experience like yeah. you can experience a film. Because then it's fascinating, because we see this already. I mean, the video game as an industry is about 30, 35 years old, maybe in there, depending on what you consider a video game. If you go back to, like, pinball machines, if you consider
Pong.
Those. Yeah. Pong is the first video game, but, you know, does that, you know, where does it all really launch from? But, you know, because we see, like, those early Atari games are still have a... that's a genre, like classic arcade yeah. games. And then you have, remember the fighting game, the side-scrolling fighting games were like the hugest rage. There were millions of those games before. Mm-hmm. You know, and when we see these genres come up, depending on the technology, RTSs like StarCraft, there was a billion of those, and then that went away. MMORPGs are all the rage right now because they're a way to create constant influx, but that will give way. And do you remember the point-and-click hidden games of the day? They were like, that was the first kind of blow up computer games, because they were easy to make, they were dynamic, and they really worked well on a computer. Games like
you'd click on someplace and then it would walk you to that area.
Monkey Island, yeah, all those kind of games. Do you remember those?
No.
Yeah, you didn't have a PC, so you didn't play this kind of game. Monkey Island was a big
I mean,
one.
I always had a PC, but I never played
the games. Yeah,
I was
like Indiana Jones. They had a series of those. Simon the Sorcerer, Day of the Tentacle.
To me, I think as weird as it may sound, is that I think that why this happens, and I'm sorry if you've already said it, but I think it's because video games are seen as a business and less as an art form.
Yeah.
That film, for whatever reason, even though it is just as much a business, and in fact, even more so.
I mean, I wanted to talk about the Avengers, but it in its first week, it made $200 million. $200 million.
And I know you agree. I'm not convincing you of this, but I think...
Do it anyway. Convince me.
The idea that they make movies as an art anymore is... really almost laughable in that...
Depends on who they is in that sense.
Well, there's art in the sense that there's independent filmmakers that are quote-unquote making art.
Yeah.
But for the most part, film is just as much, if not more, a business than video games.
Oh,
I think the difference is that there are people, and this is very ignorant, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm not completely aware of the industry, but I do think that they're the people that make games have a certain passion for the game, and I think that there's less of a person that's quote unquote a suit, who says no, we're not going to do that because we did a focus study on that, and people aren't into those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, and maybe that's true, because if you look at movies when they first started 30 years into the thing, if it started, you know, if you look at movies as an industry really kicking off around the 19-teens, 1920s, it was still seen as like a kid's entertainment. It was still seen as like popcorn or something silly to do for your afternoon. Adults enjoyed it too, but it wasn't considered very deep, and it took some time before true artistry started to be discovered within it. Because even if you look at by the late 30s, when you get like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, or Casablanca, and Gone with the Wind, like these unbelievably incredible films that people were just pulling out of the stops, did it really start to be this incredible art form? And so maybe your point is right, that at this point in the industry's evolution, if it falls along the same evolution as films, that no, people haven't really quite stepped in yet and said, no, look, this is a place to do real art. There's something I can do here, because there's too many sticks and wires. It takes too many geeks to make it happen, and that's not where the artists are at this point.
And I think there's also a certain level of, you don't have to, I don't know how to say this right, but it's like film was instantly appealing to everyone.
Yeah.
Whereas video games is still, even though the subgroup has kind of become the group, I still think it's still seen as a subculture.
Yeah.
To the mainstream culture of, you know, films and television and stuff like that.
It's a port, like comic books are a port into film. Like, film is the Super Bowl. That's where everybody wants to get, you want to make a movie out of that. They should make a movie out of that. That should be a movie. And I still maintain that video games beat movies, because you get to experience the story.
Right.
You get to do it. And when the industry...
How crazy would a world be where things are being ported into video games? Where I mean, I know that they already are, but it's like as the end all.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
On even on some level,
a video game is always the
as opposed to it being the icing on the cake, where it's like we're going to make an Avengers video game. Yeah. Or actually, I don't think they did. Which I saw a funny YouTube video that they kind of made fun of that, where they took clips from the other video games that they've already been
together,
made. They,
like the Hulk and Thor.
The sketch was, it's like, you want to play the Avengers video? But like, yeah. And they go, okay. So they took all the games, like the old Hulk from back in the day, and the Thor game, and then the Iron Man game that was crappy, and then the Captain America game that was crappy, and they duct tape all those games together. Like, now you could play as any Avenger anytime, like, because they didn't make the Avengers game.
Which is probably for the best. well, you know, and I was saying, the games that they get dissolved, like these point and clicks, there's a company I think I've mentioned at some point, but Double Fine did a Kickstarter, because they used to be big in that industry. They made Psychonauts, which wasn't a point and click game, but a big company, and they did a Kickstarter in order to get the funds they wanted in order to bring back that genre and make a game in that genre. They guess how much do you think that they needed to? They asked the public to give freely to help them kickstart their company.
The company,
yeah, to make the game happen, like
50,000.
Oh no, much more.
Okay,
yeah.
For some reason, the way you asked me made me think, oh, maybe it's not that high.
Well, think about it, like 200,000, double that. So they asked for $400,000, and that would get them all the resources that they need in order to make a game. You think about it in terms of making a film, right? In order to make a big film, Avengers, it made $200 million in the first week. It took about $200 million to make in total. So,
I see. So they're making a new game.
They're making a brand new game.
I apologize. The way I understood it to mean was that they were, we're going to bring back these point and click games that we did before.
Yeah. No.
I'm like, it takes $400,000.
No, they're making a brand new game from scratch. So guess how much they got from the gaming community. Again, this is people that are saying, okay, I will give you the money so that I can be on an investor's list, and maybe you give me something like with PBS when you get, and they'll send you a tote bag. That's all you're getting.
You're not getting any payback. You still have to buy the game.
Exactly. You're not getting anything. You're getting your name in the credits and maybe some swag.
$1 million.
$1.3 million.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. Here's their site. I'm sorry. $3.3 million.
Wow.
They asked for $400,000. They got $3,336. No, am I reading that? $3,336,000.
Yeah, you're right. $3,336,371.
87,000 people did that. Donated that much money. 87,000.
Well, it's
people.
Funny because
for a genre that's been dead for 10 years.
The guy who started this company.
Yeah.
Because when you mentioned Psychonauts, we got an email from somebody a while ago saying, hey, you should have so-and-so on the show. So I did some poking around.
Yeah.
And he has like their website. And I was like, and I go, oh, Kevin would love this if I can get this guy.
Who was it?
I can't remember his name. But it's whoever the founder of...
Oh, the founder. Great. Yeah. It's probably this guy here.
Yes, that's him. Because he on his website, on the website for the company that made Psychonauts, was essentially a form letter from him saying, here's all the answers to all the questions about Psychonauts. Please don't bug me about this on Twitter. Like, he goes, we just make games and we're trying to move on, and we appreciate that you love it, but, you know, kind of thing. Without being a jerk, but just kind of saying... Trying to handle the nerd, obsession kind of thing.
Because that is a game where you talk about artistry.
Right.
That is a piece of art.
So I sent him a tweet, I think it was, because he said, please direct all your messages. Don't email us, because it's not going to get ever. He goes, if you tweet me, he goes, and I don't even know if I'll get to it, but, you know, kind of thing.
Cool.
So I tweeted him asking to be on the show, and of course, we
should tweet him every day. Tweet campaign. Everybody tweet that guy.
Let's do a Kickstarter.
What's his tweet? Yeah.
To say how much money it would take to get a personal appearance.
You have personal projects. I have personal projects. I think everybody in LA has personal projects. And I think about these Kickstarters. I have some friends that did it. And it just seems like you probably have experienced this by doing your stand-up, like inviting your friends to be the ones in the audience to support you. Have you really won? Like, I feel like if I were to work on a project that I intend to sell to people, where I want their money is in buying the thing, not in helping me make it.
Right.
That's me.
It's a weird thing with my programming. I'm the same way, that it's like, because it's like when I was talking about when everybody helped me all the way through to the end of the Clorox thing, I felt like I had to do something for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I felt like I'm like, oh gosh. Like, I honestly, as much as I knew it was impossible, I honestly was like, I really, if I win this money, I should use that money to buy everybody an iPad. Like, like I would have that thought and be like, well, then there would be no point in them helping you to get the money. Like,
buy an iPad?
Yeah.
You like, burn through that money fast.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's dumb.
You're not, dumb.
I know. And I, but it's in me. Like, it's in me to think that way. Like, I so I completely... Like, that's what's hard. There's somebody... Yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to say something.
No, it's great. So, I'm excited for the game. I just find it interesting, the kind of turn of the community. Like, you know, on one hand, I feel like we're a pack of people that feel entitled, that are the spoiled brats. But on the other end, we put our money where our mouth is. It's like...
But I think...
And my last point about Kickstarter is that while they made $3.3 million to make a video game to donate to a company to make them a game that they will then eventually buy. They got $3.3 million. Charity Water, that helps orphans in Africa get clean water, hasn't managed to get more than $1.5 million.
Yeah, but that's there. That's this is, yeah, that's apples
I'm
and
just
oranges,
saying,
Kevin.
No, that's starving orphans in video games.
Right. Right. I mean, if they were, I mean, is it polygon based, this water situation, or
if only it were a game?
Yeah,
if only it were a game.
I mean, if it's FPS, then yeah, maybe they could pick something up. But it's, I mean, that's
stupid.
That's a hard battle. You know, it's just, it sounds text based.
Check out Charity Water. If you go and look at Double Fine, for the love of your own
soul. You know
what
I would like to do?
Go look at CharityWater.com.
I would like to beat Charity Water with our own Kickstarter of just us taking money.
I'm pretty sure Kickstarter has rules against
that. I mean,
that.
Seriously. I think a lot of people listening to this podcast are tired of orphans in Africa complaining. It's like, stop your bitching and moaning and move. And if you want to give a big F you to them, you're going to sign up for our Kickstarter and we're going to make some money. And then we're going to send them
this
a
is what
YouTube
I love about
video.
It, is you are so socially reformed. But how much time do we have left before the chimer goes off?
4 minutes.
We should listen to some voicemails.
All
Speaking
right.
of dead content, here's some voicemails.
All right. We have one. I'm trying. I have
just
to
play.
Pull it up again. No, I don't have it. I have to pull it up again.
Come on, just.
But we have the one from Ryan. Is that the one that you also?
I
want
to
hear
the one from Larry.
All right, let's see it. Here it is. We have two.
Doesn't surprise me.
Oh, wait. Two calls, one voicemail. Here it is.
Okay.
The show is May 30th at 8:30 p.m. John Lovitz Comedy Club. Confirmed comedians are Brody Stevens and Ace Keen. Brody's from The Hangover 1 and 2. Also confirmed is Rob Van Dam, TNA wrestler. He will be doing a 20-minute set. Also, John Morrison, former WWE superstar, and his girlfriend Melina will be in the house that night. Tickets are on sale for $15. If you go to the website, lovitz.com, it'll be $5 off. As well, if they type in the code WRESTLING, promo code is WRESTLING. It'll be Wednesday, May 30th, 8:30 p.m. start time. Hosted, produced by Little Larry. If you'd like to check out Little Larry, YouTube Little Larry and search him. Thanks,
Mike. Oh, man. Little Larry is a old acquaintance of Justin and I from our Great America days, and he's a self-promoter, so I'll help him out here. He's doing a show here in Los Angeles. He's got some other he's a big wrestling fan, and he's got some wrestling guys that are going to do some stand-up. He's hosting it. He asked me to promote the show, so if you're in L.A. and you like watching wrestlers do stand-up, that's the show for you. So,
John Lovitz Comedy Club is in Universal City. You can, I think it's at johnlovitzcomedyclub.com. No, he didn't say that. He just started in with the info, so I figured I'd throw him a bone there.
There it is. Yeah, great. So
it's
now you
the
know.
Universal City Walk. It's a good club. They also do, they actually turned their comedy club from a full-time comedy club into a podcast theater.
Oh,
they built
right.
a radio studio in there, and so essentially what they do is they charge the shows money, and then you can come in and do live and then become like a live studio audience. And they have a great studio setup that you can go in. And I think Kevin Smith does a lot of his shows that he does live there.
Kevin Smith, why do I know that guy?
He's from Clerks and Mallrats and all that stuff. Yeah. And he has now now he's essentially a professional podcaster and personality. He doesn't really, as far as I know, direct movies. Although that
is he
comic
Silent
book,
Jake?
He's Silent Bob.
Oh, got it.
But they did that comic book man movie that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but we didn't talk about Avengers. Why don't we spend the last... Let's talk about... Let's spend some time, like at least. I know we want to go to voicemails, and I know that.
No,
that
we're done.
Fun.
That's great. We'll talk.
No, Avengers, no. Let's talk.
That's the only voicemail I cared about. Here's the thing about Avengers. Was it freaking amazing or what?
Oh my gosh!
Do you know about this though? A buddy of mine at work told me that her husband paid $40 to go to AMC and watch all of the movies leading up to the midnight release of Avengers.
I saw somebody was talking about that on Facebook. I'm like, oh, that's a cool idea. I like that.
He said that he ate those chicken wings that they have at AMC twice to make it through the day. I need to ask, like, what time do you show up to sit through? They said they started with the second Hulk. They didn't watch the first one. Hulk, both Iron Mans, Thor and Captain America, five movies, plus then the midnight release of Avengers. I mean, you're talking 14 hours at least.
So 2 hours for Avengers.
And they had 30 minutes in between each movie.
So 2 hours for, so that's 10, then 9:30.
No, Avengers is 2.5 hours. Avengers is a long movie.
Oh, crap balls. So let's give it 3, so 9, and then you get a half hour, so 8:30, and then another, we'll say 2 hours, so that's 6:30, and then 6, and then another 2 hours is 4, and then a half hour, so you're at 3:30. And then you got 2 hours. So that's 1:30, 2 hours. Wow.
11?
Like 9 or 10 a.m.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's dedication. Good thing they didn't start with Hulk 1. Do you have those movies? I need to see them.
I do have them.
You have both
Hulks? I don't have
both
Hulks. No, the first Hulk isn't worth watching.
That's what I've heard.
It's horrible.
I need to see it because apparently Robert Downey Jr. is in the second Hulk as Iron Man.
Yes.
And so when in
event, but it's one of those
spoiler
things.
Alert. We're about to discuss the film.
It's a stinger thing.
Is that? It's not very well done.
Or what are they? Am I?
There's like a nod or hang a lantern on it or any of those terms or wink.
And we're out.
But because they did this in Iron Man 2 when the Don Cheadle moment shows up and they're like, don't get over it, I'm here. It's like, that's not a big nod.
Remember at the end of all those movies when they knew they were going to make an Avengers movie, Nick Fury was showing up? So at the end of the second Hulk movie, Tony Stark shows up.
Oh, it's in the end. It's not during the film. Okay.
No, he shows up at the very end and says, hey, I'm putting together a team. You know, kind
he
of thing.
Says it.
Yeah.
Oh, so they like retroactively fix some of that action.
Yeah, and I think he says, but I don't think he quite says it the same way that Nick Fury says everybody else. You know, kind of thing. But that's all it is. It's not that.
Got it. But the point was is that he actively meets him for the first time. Like that their whole Tony Stark and Bruce Banner's relationship in the film is that they've never met each other. And if that's the truth that they've had, like who knows how long that conversation went off screen when it was in your little teaser there, stinger. It just seems like it could have been finessed a little better.
Well, and I think that they kind of had a thing where, because they had a new Bruce Banner and everything, they're probably just saying, let's make this an entirely different thing and let's not talk about it. But my favorite, and this is a spoiler, so just go ahead and skip through the end of this episode because we're not going to talk about anything else. But if you haven't seen the movie.
Except for Avengers video game.
So I watched it, and when Hulk grabs Loki, I was so happy.
Oh, man.
It gave me so much joy, and that joy could only be matched by me coming home. My son watched it with his grandfather, and I came home and I said, son, what was your favorite part of Avengers? He looked at me, his eyes lit up, and he goes, Hulk grabbed Loki and started swinging around. It was funny. I was so proud. I'm so happy at that moment.
And
I was
he's got
like,
favorite moments now.
He got it. He got it. Like, he got easily the funniest and best moment of the entire
film.
The
other great moment is when Hulk punches Thor for no reason.
Right. That was awesome.
That's pretty great. But nowhere near as great as I
am a god. It was. I was talking about it with Heath. You see him disappear from frame and just get swung around like a rat. It was so great.
So amazing. And it goes on and on. I saw the movie twice in theaters because I loved it so much. And they do such a great job of building things in that the first time, you know, when you see a movie especially like that, it's impossible to catch all the like little subtle nuances and they talk. They mention Thanos in the very first scene of the thing of like, you don't really ask that question. Whose army is this? Where did these bad guys come from? We've never seen them before. And at the end, you're like, oh, I guess it's Thanos. They talk about it the whole time. Thor asks Loki directly. I didn't catch it the first time through. Whose army is this? And he negates the question and asks and brings up something else. Maybe the rest of the world caught it and I'm just stupid, but I didn't notice.
I didn't even think about it.
My
thoughts on the movie were I liked it and I didn't hate it and I felt like, well, it has to have a purpose, but I just felt like there was too much building up to it. Like,
yeah,
I felt
yeah, yeah.
like, what, like, and I don't know, I could be wrong, but I just feel like in a superhero movie, we want more just like, let's see him fight and struggle.
See,
and
I thought that they did such a great job of like making, it's an origin story about a team.
Yes.
And so, and you know, Joss Whedon,
that's why I understood,
is just so brilliant at this stuff. They brought the right guy in to do an ensemble picture, because if you look at Serenity or Firefly, you read any of his X-Men stuff, he is a genius at getting people in a room and setting them up like dominoes, and then one conflict, and they all have differing opinions. Captain America's taking shots at Iron Man for no reason. Iron Man's pointing the finger at Nick Fury. Nick Fury's pointing it at Thor. Everybody's mad at somebody else for doing something, and it's just, the dialogue just seems to write itself. Everything comes right out. I have the utmost respect for Joss Whedon.
That's what we were talking about, is that it's like, because remember when they had the guy, I can't pull
He wrote
line.
And directed it, just in case you're not privy to that. Not you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Us.
I totally forgot other people were listening. When they had the guy who did Brokeback Mountain do the first Hulk, I'm like, no. You don't need a film maker, okay? You don't need that.
You need a comic book.
Martin Scorsese doesn't make Iron Man 3.
No, but he could make Batman 3. I'd watch the hell out of that movie. I would.
You'd
be all
watch
weird.
It.
To be like the Mushroom King.
You'd watch it and be like, okay, Leonardo DiCaprio's Bruce Wayne, maybe. You know,
no.
But
Martin Scorsese would cast like Brad Pitt. Just
and then
to be off mark.
Who's it? Daniel Day Lewis would be playing Richard Dent. That's what.
But
it
then, mean. But then, Colt 45 would actually play because he was. In the very, sorry, we're way off topic, but what? In the very first Batman movie.
That's what I was wanting you to say. He was in the very first Star Wars trilogy.
No, yeah, he was.
I
Who
know.
Was that guy's name?
Billy Dee Williams.
Billy Dee Williams is in the first Batman movie as Two-Face, the Harvey Dent. He plays Harvey Dent, district attorney. But then,
but they never got around to making
but
him
he's never
Two-Face.
He's never Two-Face, yeah. Of course, who's going to make Billy Dee Williams
The one with Michael
Two-Face?
Keaton?
Yes.
Oh.
They cut to it, like, and local attorney at law, Harvey Dent. To, you see him in the courtroom
drinking
saying
malt
something.
Liquor.
Yeah, exactly.
So my point is that we were talking about. I go other than him and Jon Favreau. I mean, and I think what the was it Chris Nolan? Am I saying his name right? The guy who does Dark Knight and all those.
Yeah.
I think what he's doing is something different.
Oh yeah,
which I think is great. But I don't think that every superhero movie could be pulled off in that way. I think Batman is very specific in that he could turn that into a dark film and it will succeed.
Well, and with the launch and the success of, or the tragedy of
Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
But I still think that it was, you know what I mean? Like, I still
it's
think,
a great film. And right. I walked out of the Dark Knight and I actually said these words, which I've never said before or after seeing a movie. That was perfect. The movie was perfect. But it is not. It does not play in the same sandbox as Iron Man 1 or Avengers.
Because
which
it's
are both
unfair to
movies.
Call it a comic book movie, because I do think that he did the thing where he was a filmmaker who made a great film.
Yeah.
But I think Jon Favreau did a really good job with Iron Man. I think Sam Raimi did okay with Spider-Man. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? And I was like, I would go, this is interesting. And I hope that this is Hollywood going, with the success of the Avengers going, yeah, now we're starting to get it. Is that what we need to do is find a guy
Which
like Joss
Disney.
Whedon who's like, I used to live comic books. This is my thing. This is what I do.
Yeah.
And let's also find a guy that is maybe not done any blockbuster type movie ever.
Done a few big things, but
Well, yeah, I mean Toy Story, but and other big things, but not like summer blockbuster special effects film.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But here's what he has. He has the people that are your audience to see this film.
Yes.
He has those people. He is one of those people. Those people are humongous fans of his. And I think that Jon Favreau really made a name for himself within that area by doing such an amazing job with Iron Man. I wish I knew more about how much he, it really makes him look good that when he was, you know, signing up to do Iron Man 3 and they were writing the script, they kept wanting appearances from Captain America.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, that's another Avengers movie. We just did that movie.
Yeah.
That's another movie. This is just Iron Man. That's the whole point. He goes, what you're not doing is you're not taking advantage of the world you're creating.
Yeah.
Let Iron Man be Iron Man.
And that's the thing.
And then you could have that story to tell when he's an Avenger, too.
It's so funny that, I mean, whenever or who, maybe it evolved or somebody had an idea, maybe we can go this way when they made the first Iron Man movie. Because I don't think at the end of Hulk, the first Hulk that they're like, I think in 10 years we're going to do an Avenger movie with all these characters. But somewhere along the line, some studio execs were like, I think if we navigate the ship, we might be able to land this way. But Avengers is essentially the sequel to five films. Like, it's incredible. And talk about the payoff. It's not the only way to market something, but seriously, $200,000, $200 million in opening weekend.
And that's just here.
That's just here. It is in
It made another
week,
$600 million worldwide.
Yeah, just in the United States, it has grossed $373 million. It's in the top 20, second week out, all-time grossing films. It is only it's only like $80 shy of Spider-Man 2, which is not in theaters.
Yeah.
So it will easily surpass and jump into the top 10.
And that's not even going to count Blu-ray DVD sales.
Yeah, and this is just box office. It's fascinating. I look at this list.
I bet you that doesn't even include merchandise.
No, it's just the movie. I mean, this movie will reshape kind of movies for the next 10
years. I would
be
shocked if it doesn't replace Star Wars as far as like merchandising and all that.
That's the thing that's so great about it is that you look at these top 10, top 20 biggest films, and they're all like, they're all family movies. They're all movies, that's what I realized when I went and saw the Avengers, well, they're mostly family movies. When we went and saw the Avengers at 11 o'clock, the room was filled with kids your age dressed in costumes.
Yes.
And the movie is not intended for
kids. You
mean
my kid's age.
Yeah, what did I say?
You said kids my age.
Kids your age.
I knew what you meant.
No, like 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds in their different...
I missed my son because I watched another like 3-4-year-old boy and he just had the biggest smile on his face. Like he was about to see Christmas again.
Yeah.
Like...
It's perfect. It's brilliant. Yeah. And
well,
it's
and here's what I can weigh in on that subject is that I used to get annoyed with how many family movies were made. I'm like, who the hell is watching this?
And then you have a kid. A family movie.
It's not. But then you have a kid, and you start to realize that you need outlets. Yeah. There isn't a lot for you to do that's just like makes sense. And so, it's weird that I talked about this with my therapist, where it's like you do this weird thing where you try to hang on to your life before you had kids.
Mm.
And he said, so like when we try to watch a movie, he's like, yeah, you're trying to do what you did before you had kids. And it's hard because you have kids now because it takes us 3 days to watch a movie. And
right.
It's like, you get frustrated about it. But when he pointed out that way, I'm like, oh yeah, why am I trying?
Mm.
Why am I trying to live my old life? It's not like my new life is bad. Mm. You know what I mean? Just turn the TV off and play with your kids, dummy. Like it's not hard. But you have a pattern, and you were used to that pattern because you've lived a life without kids longer than you've lived a life with kids.
Oh, sure, that makes sense.
And so, that's what, now I get it. Now I get it. It's like, when you see Cars 2,
mass appeal.
And you're like, I love Cars, I'm going to go see Cars 2. And when you see Avengers, like, I would love to go see Avengers, even if I didn't have kids.
Yeah.
Now I can take my kid with me. Oh, thank God, this is going to be great.
It's going to be wonderful.
Yeah,
The top, Avatar is number one, Titanic. Number two. Then Dark Knight, so that kind of throws away the family thing. Then Star Wars Episode 4.
Avatar the top grossing movie?
Avatar and Titanic are the top grossing films.
How does Avatar beat Titanic? That is disgusting.
Just in the United States.
But still, that movie was horrible.
It's the all-time highest grossing U.S. box office film. Now, they're also 12 years apart, so there is inflation to be counted in that.
But still.
And people are subjects to
I wonder if that's why he re-released it. I wonder how long ago, because they re-released Titanic. And
well, that's why it's yellow. The movies that are in theaters are in yellow. So, like, Hunger Games is on this list. Star Wars Episode 1 is yellow again because it's back in theaters. That's right. So, that's funny that the Titanic 3D isn't listed as its own film. My guess is that Avengers will easily break the top 10 and possibly even get into the top 3. It may usurp Dark Knight at 500.
Like before the month is what you're thinking?
Before it's out of theaters. Mm-hmm. So it's got Dark Knight is at $533 million. That's a lot. So they would have to more than double what they've got in the theater right now in week two.
All right, so get out there. We got to see movies, guys. I don't know what that means. I don't even care about that.
That's just my guess.
I think we're good, yeah?
Oh, is that two episodes? We can split that in half.
No,
so,
we did another
15
minutes.
Avengers posted on the Facebook wall? Do you have a genre of film or of games that you miss that wish was still around? Post that on the Facebook wall. That's your homework.
There you go. So give us a call, 408-228-49. Wow.
Is it? Okay, we're okay.
4911. Or send us email to show@secondfunniestpodcast.com. Don't forget to keep telling your friends. If you go to secondfunniestpodcast.com, you can email your favorite episode. You can share it on Facebook. All that stuff is there. Find us on Facebook. Like us. We're at 600 people, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But I think we have more people that listen to the show than still like us on Facebook. Yeah, yeah. So throw us a like. Facebook.com/secondfunniestpodcast. Or you can follow us on the Twitter. That we don't have as many people, I think, following us on
Twitter.
No,
I need to be more on that.
At Second Funniest is our Twitter handle, so you can hit us up there. On behalf of my good friend, Kevin Miller, this is Justin Worship saying,
okay, bye.